There continues to be a lot to talk about. COVID's effect on the brain, a second wave of outbreaks, Trump's continued crazy medical advice, and yes, it is crazy when you suggest that people look into getting injected with disinfectants. But that's nothing, I guess, compared to the earlier in the outbreak, the QAnons were telling people that they should drink bleach to protect themselves. Back on topic. The effects of his daily briefs, all of these things are on the list, along with renewed interest in Joe Biden's assault allegations, the disappearance of North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un. Where is he at? Nobody knows. Well, Trump says he knows, but he says he can't say, so nobody knows. The continued spread of COVID-19 and the spreading protest about people being tired of being under a government lockdown. In Michigan, matter of fact, earlier today, even there was a armed protest. Well, they had weapons. I don't want to make you think that they were going in there shooting, but there were a bunch of people with weapons that marched on the state house, trying to get the shelter in place orders revoked. But we still have a job to do, and here at Lessons from the Screen, we're gonna do our job, and that job remains getting through the most expensive piece of legislation in American history. So we continue with part four of the $2 trillion damn dollars. What can you buy with that?
This is Lessons from the Screen.
Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not a show, a document, a documentary, any particular information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You are always very welcome. Lessons from the Screen, as always, is sponsored by PAX Inc., a Black activist advocacy and think tank organization, with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for Black people in America through education, a culture shift in economics. You can check them out at www.pactsinc.org. That's PAXINC.org. As always, leave a comment, leave a review, tell a friend to tell a friend. Check out the Learning Center, read a book, become a member, become a subscriber, donate, do whatever you can to help them because they are doing whatever they can to help you. And without further ado, let's go ahead and jump right on into what we got to jump right on into. So today we're going to talk about some other business provisions. That's on the topic today. That is what we're going to be talking about. So if you ain't got a business or if you ain't interested, you might want to skip this one. But I don't think you should because, like, it's me and I'm live. Anyway, what's funny about all of this is that it's basically undoing or, in one particular case, outright fixing things changed in the tax codes when the famous or infamous, depending on what side of the aisle you're on, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed back in 2017. But let's go ahead and get right into it. So we start in, this is Subtitle 2 of Section C. I'm sorry, Title 2. Subtitle C of Title 2. Get it together. We're not going to have a relapse the last episode. All right. And this is labeled Business Provisions and focuses on tax credits and other benefits to compensate certain employers for losses due to COVID-19. Now, we start out in section 2301. And I was breaking it up. So like in the first part of the series was title one. And the second was title 2A. And then the third was title 2B. And this is title 2C. And now this is going to be the final one after this one. We're going to move into title 3. Yay. So 2301, and it opens things up with an employee retention credit for employers subject to closure due to COVID-19. Now, eligible employers are allowed a credit against employment taxes for each calendar quarter that is equal to 50% of qualified wages for each employee during the calendar quarter. Now, the amount of the qualified wages to an employee can exceed $10,000. The credit also can't exceed the applicable employment taxes on wages paid. But if the credit does exceed applicable taxes, then it will be treated as an overpayment and a refund will be issued. Now, the employment tax spoken of in this section is in Title 26 of the Internal Revenue Code, Chapter 21, Subchapter B, which outlines taxes on employers. Section 3111, Subsection A, outlines an employer tax equal to 6.2% of wages paid. Now, eligible employer is defined as an employer which was carrying on trade or business during the 2020 calendar year and whose operation was fully or partially suspended because of COVID-19 or experienced a 50% drop in gross receipts for the same calendar quarter from the prior year and experienced a calendar quarter following the diminished quarter that was more than 80% from the same quarter in the previous year. See, you see how I did that? Every time I say a quarter, I took a quarter break. Yeah, I'm dope. Anyways, so tax-exempt organizations also fall under this order. Now, qualified wages are defined as wages for full-time employees employed by an eligible employer as long as the number of people employed was greater than 100. These wages have to also have been paid to an employee that was not rendering a service because of COVID-19 related suspensions or operations. If the average number of full-time employees was less than 100 in 2019, then basically it becomes wages paid by eligible employers that fit into the above mentioned scenario of not being able to render service because of COVID-19 related suspicions. So basically, there isn't much of a difference from what I could see reading this thing between distinctions made for businesses with over 100 employees and businesses with less than 100 employees. Now, I'm not saying I didn't miss anything. They made the distinction. I'm sure they made the distinction for a reason, but I couldn't see the reason as I was reading through the document. And I've said before, I am by no means a legal expert or a lawyer or a teacher that teaches this stuff in a college. I'm just a guy that reads papers. So, Now, moving forward. Wages that fall under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act provision, which we talked about in an earlier show, are not covered. Those wages were covered in that law for people that had gotten sick, had to take care of someone that had gotten sick, or had to watch someone because the schools or other institutions they would normally be at are closed because of COVID-19. Now, that means if you had a situation to where you couldn't go to work because you got sick or your spouse or somebody you had to take care of got sick, a dependent of some sort, or because your children couldn't go to school because the schools closed or something like that, anything like that, then that's covered under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. Now, if you can't go to work because your job was closed or your department or your hours were cut in response to mandated suspensions of work because of COVID-19, then you fall under this. And so there you go. Now, qualified wages cannot exceed the amount of money that the person would have been paid under normal circumstances. Qualified wages also include qualified health plan expenses, which are properly allocable to such wages. Now, qualified health plan expenses means amounts paid or incurred by the eligible employer to provide and maintain a group health plan, but only the amounts that are excluded from the gross income of employees. Qualified health plan expenses are allocated to qualified wages according to the Secretary of Treasury or the Secretary's delegate. And other forms of compensation for work are also included in wages. Now, federal and state agencies do not qualify for this credit, and there are also no double benefits or double counting employees or wages. Businesses that take a small business interruption loan also don't qualify for this credit if they get the loan and the loan is forgiven. Now, funding for this credit is funded from transfers to the general fund and the treasury, and businesses that don't deposit employment taxes will have their penalty waived at the discretion of the secretary if he believes that it was due to reasonable anticipation of the credit. The secretary also has total control over forms, information request, and the structure of the program, and wages paid after March 12, 2020, but before January 1st, 2021, are the only wages that qualify. So here again, you're dealing with basically a credit that businesses would get for paying workers that cannot work because of suspensions in work because of COVID-19. So this is, it's another tax break. You know, basically, you, if you keep paying your employees during this thing, while this thing is shut down, you can write those wages off and get a tax credit for it. And in some cases, it's looking like there is a way that you can manipulate this whole thing into getting a tax, a refund, where you get money back for overpayment. And with a lot of these things that we've talked about and that we're talking about here and that we're going to be talking about in the future, there is the possibility of getting a refund. And you know that a lot of these businesses with their high-priced, high-powered legal teams are definitely going to be getting maximum refund. We just saw this again with the SBA loans, where the larger SBA businesses, the ones that had the wealth, the finances and the resources to contract out or do business with high powered law firms to stay ahead of the curve, or had their own legal teams that could stay ahead of the curve, they got access to that money first. Meanwhile, the mom and pop shop that they kept talking about the money being for, they got left out. And it's looking like that's going to happen with the second round. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a third round. I believe, anyways, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure there's going to be a third round. And we'll see how many people actually make it into that, because the end of the second round toward going into the third round is when I think that people that are the people that actually need this money, the people that they were talking about, are actually going to start seeing the money seep into them. And even to that, there's something else that has to be discussed there, with the fact that they had to structure this thing as a loan. Again, we're talking about the PPP payments. They had to structure those things as loans in order to get them out of the door faster. They wanted them to be grants, but the bureaucracy that's in place wouldn't allow for rapid disbursement of grant funds to businesses. And there was just no structure in place to do such a thing. So they structured it as a loan so that it could get out of the door faster. You could get the private sector involved, private entities involved. They would be responsible for a lot of the legwork and a lot of the moving parts of all of this. And people would get their money faster. There is a lot to be said about the requirements of making this situation, turning it into a loan situation in order to get the money out faster, because your government doesn't have the ability to move fast enough to get grants out of the door when you need to get grants out of the door, which is, from what I understand, essentially what they wanted to do. There is a lot to talk about in there as well, and there's a lot to talk about in all of this, but that point is one that I think about pretty regularly, about why they had to structure all of this the way they structured it, which really makes no sense, when people should be able to just get money directly from the government in these cases. There shouldn't be a need to go through any third-party financial institutions to get loans, to potentially have all of these other things happening where you have people having their funds tied up because of any sort of overdraft problems or any sort of other problems they have with financial institutions, not being able to have full access to the funds that they have because the financial institutions have chosen to take their money up front before they release the money to the people that it's supposed to go to. That becomes a problem. And so even now you have the Federal Reserve coming out saying that we're willing to issue direct payments to people, but we don't have the authority to do so. Congress has that authority, and Congress needs to move on that authority. And this is something that we talked about all of the time. Congress and their reluctance to exercise the power of the purse, which is their constitutional right and responsibility to control. And that's not happening here. And they're doing everything they can to make it look like they're doing something without taking total responsibility for doing anything. All of these shortcomings and mishaps that are happening now are being placed at the feet of the banks or at the feet of other institutions, where they really should be squarely at the feet of the government and the way it's handling everything. But anyways, I digress. That was a long tangent, but I needed to get it off my chest. Woosah and see. So now, Section 2302 covers a delay of payment of employer payroll taxes. And so as long as a SBA loan from other sections of this law have been received and forgiven, a taxpayer might qualify for this delay. Now, what I said that kind of funky. If you got an SBA loan and got it forgiven, then you don't qualify to have a delay in payment of employer payroll taxes. If you have not gotten an SBA loan and had it forgiven, then you may qualify for the delay. Now, half the taxes imposed under 1401A, which is a self-employment income tax of 12.4%, won't be due before the applicable date. And estimated tax provisions are not applied. Now, Section 6654 of the IRC, the Internal Revenue Code, I can say it and I know what it is. All right, chill out. Just chill out. That covers a failure to pay estimated income tax and mandates payments be broken up into four installments for the taxable year. And basically what this delay does is it makes it so that income taxes and estimates are due on the due date. Payments are delayed until December 31st, 2021, and any payments left over are due December 31st, 2022. Now, the start of the deferral period is the day this law passed and ends on January 1st, 2021. And the Secretary of Treasury also has ultimate power with regards to this program as well. Now, let me say this. I believe when I was talking about Section 2301, I mentioned that you needed the SBA loan and the forgiveness thing and that. So that actually does not apply to that section, but it applies to this section. All right. So it does not apply to 2301, but it does apply to 2302. So, and speaking specifically, it does not apply to the employee retention credit for employers subject to closure due to COVID-19, but it does apply to the delay in payment for employer payroll taxes. You follow? You have these. So Section 2303 covers modifications for net operating losses. Now, net operating losses incurred during 2018 through 2020 can now be carried back 5 years from the year of the loss, with the remaining net losses carried forward indefinitely. Now, during these years, the collective net operating loss carryover plus the collective net operating loss carrybacks to one of these years is offset to 100% of the taxable income. Now, tax cuts passed in 2017 eliminated. Here we go back to that tax cut. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the TCJA that was passed in 2017 eliminated loss carrybacks to previous years and limited the income offset to 80%. This temporarily undoes that, as it no longer applies past December 2020. So all the way up until December 2020, things effectively go back to the way they were. Now, carrying a loss forward is an accounting maneuver that applies the current losses you experienced this tax year to future years in order to reduce your tax burden for those future years. And it allows a company to take the losses it has experienced and use them to lower their tax burden in the years that they experience a profit or that they expect a profit. While the tax cuts from 2017 removed the 2-year carry back and reduced the carry forwards to 80%, it extended carry forwards from 20 years to indefinitely. So they can carry forward their debt forever. Now, carry backs is where a company applies current losses to past years in order to obtain a tax refund for payments already made. So if you paid your taxes in 2019, but then experienced a huge loss in profits, not a huge loss, but experienced a loss in profits in 2020, then you could carry back the losses you experienced in 2020 to your tax application in 2019 and potentially get refunded some of the money that you paid in 2019. I wish. Anyways, now this whole section also does not apply to real estate investment trusts. So, you know, basically this section is another tax cut for businesses, and that goes along with this whole section in general, which is basically for businesses. Now, I'm not going to put the in at every moment because these are kind of brief, but so we'll go through the next one. So 2304 covers the modification of limitations on losses for taxpayers other than corporations for tax years between 2018 and 2026. The excess foreign loss limitation has been lifted, and the excess business loss limitation for all other non-corporate taxpayers are also removed for tax years prior to January 1st, 2021. Now, the loss limitation ends December 31st, 2025, and the laws go back to 2018, which allows an amendment of the 2018 and 2019 tax returns. And this goes hand in hand with the previous section about net operating losses. Again, this is another way those two sections hold hands together to create another way for businesses to offset the losses that they're experiencing this year, and either move them forward or move them back 2 years and get a refund for the government from the two previous years that they paid taxes on. I mean, you know, it ain't tricking if you got it. That's what they say. Whatever. You smoke crack, don't you? Don't you smoke crack? Yo, I've been having thoughts of Lean On Me for like the last like 4 weeks, and I ain't watched it yet, but I just keep thinking about like the song, you know, the Fairy Side song. I think I broke out and sung it in one of these episodes. I don't know. Maybe I need to watch it. Hey, if there are any therapists like listening to this, what that mean? Like, leave a comment. Let me know what that mean. I'm curious. Anyways, so we're moving on to section 2305, which covers the modification of credit for prior year minimum tax liability of corporations. Now, this section specifically allows for the application of credits or a refund to taxpayers for the 2019 year with an electable option for 2018 to replace 2019, while also removing alternative minimum tax credits from 2018 to 2021. And within 90 days of filing the necessary form, the Treasury will review the applications to determine the appropriate action and amounts. And when I say taxpayer, I'm talking about businesses here. They say taxpayer in the law, but they mean businesses. Anyways, Section 2306 covers modifications of limitations on business interests, which goes hand in hand to what we just talked about before. But this section increases the adjusted taxable income, the ATI, limitation from 30% to 50% for 2019 and 2020. Now, taxpayers can also choose which ATI they want to use, 2019 or 2020. And in the case of partnerships, 50% ATI that it was increased to does not apply to 2019. And unless a partner doesn't have the rules apply, they can choose to opt out. Only 50% of the excess business interest is treated as business interest to be paid or accrued by the partner in the first taxable year in 2020. And this is not subject to business interest limitations. The rest continues as normal. That's talking about partnerships. So beyond those things that I mentioned, the rest continues as normal, the same with everybody else. Now, this section can be opted out of, and after opting out can still be invoked with the consent of the Secretary of the Treasury. That is a powerful, powerful, powerful man right now. Very, very powerful. He has, between the Secretary of Treasury and the Secretary of Labor, they might actually be right now, with regards to this stuff, like more powerful than the President and Congress. Like, this is, these are some powerful people. Everything that I've been reading about in this thing is like at the discretion of the Secretary of the Treasury or the Secretary of Labor. And in some points, the Secretary of Labor is actually responsible for briefing the Secretary of the Treasury. So the Secretary of Treasury has immense power in all of this. And I guess it makes sense. He is the Secretary of the Treasury, but still, it's a lot to think that one person has this much leeway and discretion to move, especially when you take into account the level of bias and the level of cronery and the level of, I'm not going to get into it, but the level of favoritism, that's a good word for it, favoritism being displayed in this administration. It is very interesting. Not saying that all administrations don't display a level of favoritism, but I am saying that every other administration that I've read about or lived through has been a lot better at hiding it. This administration, it's like they're not even trying. Come on, guys, you can do better. You can do better. I'm disappointed. Anyway, Section 2307 makes changes to the qualified improvement property policy, and this was another policy put into place with the TCJA. But that was passed in 2017. It effectively consolidates the many different types of property classifications for improvements and depreciation into one rate. Now, QIP, which, you know, qualified improvement property, refers to any improvements to the interior of a non-residential building made after the building was placed in service. And that doesn't include making the building bigger, adding escalators or elevators, and making changes to the internal structures of the building. This change makes the depreciable life of the QIP 15 years instead of 39, making the QIP eligible for a full depreciation bonus. The change also covers assets placed into service in 2018 moving forward. And this is a huge boon to, like, the restaurant industries and other industries where they're constantly having to renovate their buildings, or they're having to add things in after they get the building built, because now they can claim depreciation bonuses for all of those things that they buy on their taxes. And nice little tax cut, nice little tax credit. So that's that. And finally, we just had Section 2308, which simply suspends the tax for alcohol used in hand sanitizers through 2020. So for all of you bootleggers, I mean, all of you people out there that are making and growing alcohol with the purpose of hand sanitizer, you don't have to worry about that alcohol tax as long as you're using it for hand sanitizer. But, you know, like, hell's going to know. I'm sure they got some way of figuring it out, but really. You know what? I'm learning I've been learning throughout my life, but this is really like, really like centering it in for me. People just ain't shit, and there really just ain't no other way around it. Like, where's the whole good of human nature when you have people walking through supermarkets licking stuff and spitting on people and putting out manifestos saying it's their goal to get sick and get as many other people sick as possible? And you got people hoarding PPE, and you got people hoarding hand sanitizer. Where's the whole, like, good natural nature of human beings? Because it hasn't been displayed in ever. I think you people watch too many movies. And I think the problem with you people watching too many movies is you identify with the hero in the movie, when in reality, you're probably closer in behavior and characteristics to the villain. I think that's what we're experiencing right now. And I think that that's shown on a subconscious level, because movies with great villains tend to do better than movies with great heroes. Like, you can have the greatest hero in the world and nobody's going to want to watch it. Villains make movies successful. Look at the Joker movie. And I think our natural affinity towards villains is a subconscious display of our awfulness as living beings. And I just think it's time we live up to that. Hey, if there are any therapists in the house, write me a comment. I'm interested in that too. So I need y'all to leave me a comment about the dream thing, not the dream thing, the Lean On Me thing. And if you have not seen Lean On Me, you are disqualified. You cannot message me about anything in life until you have seen that movie. And you should have your qualifications taken from you. And I will lobby to have your qualifications taken from you if you have not seen Joe Clark tell Sam's to jump off the roof because he smoked crack. And if he gonna kill himself, he don't need to fuck around with it. He need to do it expeditiously. Anyways, so there's that. But I also want to know what you guys think about my synopsis on the, or about my briefing, my summary on the awfulness, the just awfulness of human nature. Because from what I'm looking at, there's just not too many other words around it. We're pretty horrible. We're pretty despicable. We're pretty filthy. Even the fact that people don't want to be inside to keep other people from being sick. Like they're like, look at the protests happening right now. There are like 100,000 people dead in America nearly. And these people are out here protesting because they got to stay in their house. Like they're bigger concerns than your goddamn job. But I will see you next week on the next episode of $2 damn trillion. Lessons from the Screezy.
Lessons from the screen. What we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trust me, tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
I want to thank you guys once again for listening to Lessons from the Screen. I want to ask you guys to go to, if you have an Android device, go to the Google Play Store, type in Freedom Train Radio. You'll see the logo of the train. Download the app, get the app. It'll keep you up to date on all of the shows and everything else that's going on here at the Freedom Train Network. Also, head on over to www.freedomtrainradio.com and check out all the shows. Leave comments, leave reviews. If you want to reach us or say anything to us, that's the best way to do it. Because if you just reach out through your social media, your a podcast listening app or YouTube or whatever, we don't check all of those things, but we do check the website. So go there. Also, I just want to thank you guys once again for tuning in, and see you next week. Let me know what you think about the show you just listened to. Let me know if you agree, disagree, you felt like I missed something, whatever it is, just holla at your boy, and I will see you next week or whenever the next show comes out. And if you are interested in sponsoring the show again, hit us up on the Freedom Train Radio website and let us know that you're interested in sponsoring a particular show or the entire network.